boys and girls. It is the ghoulish, creepiest episode of the year. It is our Halloween extravaganza.
Halloween!
I made sure I let you get that in there this time so I didn't cut you off.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, it is our Halloween episode. We are going to binge on this year's Halloween movies. This is a weird year. No way around it. It was a year that should have been a masterclass in horror, but instead, we found new ways to absorb horror and watch the few horror movies that did come out. We're going to talk about the great ones. We're going to talk about the worst ones. We might talk a tiny bit about Borat because I feel like I need to mention a little bit about Borat. But Hambone, did I just do your intro for you? I feel like I might have just done your intro for you.
It's okay. You were running smooth, man. I just want to let it. I would let you play through.
Yeah, thank you very much, buddy. But, you know, cocktails are your thing. So before we do that, I feel like we need to introduce our special guest. Once again, the master of evil, the master of horror, multi-Emmy award-winning editor, our friend, guest of the show, Matt Giaquinto.
Hey, boys and girls out there in my Thailand. How's everybody doing?
Everybody's doing great. We had you on earlier this month. We thought we kind of probably should have you on the horror episode. Since you have made horror movies, you have lived the horror life. You tend to watch the weird shit I watch that Hambone won't touch. So it's a good back and forth. We're glad to have you on the show today. But Hambone, you need to give us some cocktail recommendations, and you know we appreciate this every week that you do for us because you know we kind of need you to be the great sober bartender to make us feel very intoxicated with your love and Mai Tai suggestions. Go right ahead.
Exactly, I'm like the world's best bartender because you never have to worry about me drinking on the job. I don't get high on my own supply anymore. So this is called the Jack O' Lantern, and I decided to make a Jack O' Lantern cocktail without any pumpkin in it, so it's drinkable for everybody. Now, this
Wait. Are there people who are, like, allergic to pumpkin?
I am.
No.
Really?
Yeah, well, that is.
Oh.
I am.
I had no idea. So no pumpkin seeds, no pumpkin pie, no.
It's just going to be orange colored. So here we go. It is an ounce and a half of cognac. Any kind of cognac will do. Preferably, if you want it to be smoother, you want to go with the VSOP. Half an ounce of orange liqueur, like a Grand Marnier. 1 ounce of orange juice. Definitely do it without the pulp because we're not sadists. 2 ounces of ginger ale. And then you're going to garnish it with an orange wilt and a lime twist. So here's how you're going to make it. You're going to pop all of the ingredients into a cocktail shaker except for the ginger ale. You're just going to top it off at the end. You're going to put it in over some ice. You're going to shake that sumbitch up. You are going to strain it into a glass with a nice fresh ice cube, and then you're going to top it off with that ginger ale, hit it with the orange wheel and the lime twist. It'll be spooky, ooky, ooky, and it'll go down smooth, the jack-o'-lantern.
So I got some hate mail this week from someone who was so disturbed by the fact that we didn't actually make the cocktail on the air. And I haven't written back to him yet. I know if I should, but I was like, hey, buddy, we did make the cocktails on the air. We did them for the first, like, 30 or so episodes of the show, and it was an absolute nightmare. It would imagine the amount of time. We had a pre-set up for, like, half an hour to get the ice right, to get everything ready to go, to have the amounts. We were even, like, pre-measuring sometimes. We would then make the cocktail on the air, make a complete mess of the whole set. This was when we were on TV, on video. And they were complaining about a video version post making the drinks. And I'm just like, dude, you have no idea how big of a waste of time that was. And then we would get drunk. And I look, that was even the bad part. I do feel like some of those episodes were true high art, but making it was not conducive to good radio. And now that we're mostly a podcast format, if we were a visual podcast, like even when it was visual, it didn't make sense for us to really make the cocktails on air. So sorry, buddy. I'm sorry you didn't like it. All the best cocktails we made in those first 30 or so episodes, go look them up on YouTube. You'll find us. You'll see Hambo making some of the best drinks in the world. That's all I've got to say about that. But
yeah, and what happened behind the scenes was Hambo had to take an Uber to and from George's house every Tuesday because we'd be fucking wasted.
and usually
what I just say is, you know the movie Star Wars? Did they go to outer space to film it?
Yeah, I mean, cool. Thank you, though, for sending in some fan mail. We do appreciate you listening to our show. But yeah, we're not going to ever be making drinks on air again. So
and there was the fact that, like, there was, I mean, the amount of drinks we could actually feasibly make with the what we had on hand was insane. So it was like,
we put a lot of booze. We're not sponsored by booze companies. So every bit of booze that was poured was bought with our money.
And on top of that, it's the mixer. So forget about the booze. I can afford booze, Ham. But we won't, in all honesty, the amount of booze you use in some of these cocktails is not
back
crazy.
Back then I could too. Yeah.
But the mixers, the weird great stuff you have to grate, the weird syrups, like that's when it was getting
the one-off stuff.
Very, very hard to have it on hand to be able to make enough. Like, we're on 284 now. Episode 284.
Jesus Christ.
Do you realize how many cocktails? Like, all the Beach Bum Berry books would not be able to supply the amount of drinks, the ingredients. And, you know, it is what it is. I still am very proud of cocktail culture and the world it is. And I, you know, we love teaching you guys how to make a new drink every week. It's just... Yeah, buddy, that would be absolute mad. You would have to stock us to be able to pull off making a real drink every single week. Anyway, guys, again, thank you for joining the show. I feel we have to get something off the plate really quickly. We are going to do a full review next week of the Borat movie, Borat 2. It has a much longer name than I don't know what it is. But I do feel that we need to at least share our quick thoughts on it because I feel like it's the most important pop culture moment of the last week. Would you agree, Hambone?
You know, I actually would, and I was, and this is my quick thought on it. I'm going to give you my quick thought on it because I'm going to save it, most of it for next week. I was definitely worried after having lived through the whole first Borat experience with everyone walking around going, my wife, and like all that bullshit, that I was going to have to endure that again. But then I remembered, I don't leave my house, so it's fine. We're all good. I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I was pleasantly surprised. I was shocked by the things that I was supposed to be shocked by. And I think he kind of did an excellent job with it, all said and done. And because it's totally free to watch on Amazon Prime, if you're a Prime member, like half of America is, go watch this movie.
Yeah, agree 100%. I saw it. I laughed out loud. I was not an Ali G fan at all. I don't find that type of humor. It's not my cup of tea. Didn't really enjoy it. I also, Borat, you know, look, he reminds me of like Greek people a little bit. So I do find a little bit of humor in that.
But, give him a Greek pass?
Yeah, you know, just a little bit. You can see some time. Yeah, it is what it is. Bruno, I liked a little bit more, but you're right. When we heard about another Borat movie this far removed from the first
14
Borat,
years.
I was like, is this really going to be good? And he did a great job. I think it has a lot to do with also his maturity level. I think the state of the country that we're in right now, the world we're in, you know, I think he did a very good job using where we're, you know, just everything we're at, what, 2 weeks, a week before the election? I mean, something crazy like that. This is the right movie for the right time, and it makes sense. And you do not need to know anything about Borat. They even do a little bit of a previously on at the beginning of it so you can understand it. But it is a great movie. Unless you, like, are a fan of Donald Trump, then you may not like it, or Rudy Giuliani.
I'm going to just give you a quick little tidbit to think about when you're watching Borat or imagining what you thought about Borat before we review it next week. If you look at the Borat movie, the new one with the 90-word title, that if you look at it through the lens of a Michael Moore documentary, it's a perfect documentary. Like, it's actually like a legitimate, like, if you had told me that Michael Moore had made this movie, I would be like, yeah, it's plotted out just like one, like, you know, Bowling for Columbine or any of that other bullshit that he did. It's kind of funny when you look at it because it does perfectly marry the Hollywood. This is a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, but yet we're going to weave social commentary throughout the movie seamlessly. So watch it. That's your homework. We're going to talk about it next week, but fuck all that right now. It's Halloween, everybody.
Halloween. Is it Halloween? I think we should start with that first. Matt, does this feel like Halloween to you this year?
Not a single pumpkin seed.
Yep. I got to agree with that. I think Hambone disagrees with me on this.
I do. Because Halloween's in our fucking hearts, y'all. Halloween is in our hearts. Halloween, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. Your old buddy Hambone started celebrating Halloween the day the candy hit the goddamn shelf. So that is right. The middle of August in the year that will go down in history as the worst of all time. I started celebrating Halloween, started watching scary movies. I started eating candy. I started thinking, I actually bought a costume, not knowing what or if I would do anything this year. I didn't give a shit because Halloween lives forever, whether or not we can get together. There, I said it. It's fucking Halloween, everybody.
Well, I look, I, I'm excited that you're excited. I won't take that away from you. I'm not taking Halloween away from you.
I carved a pumpkin.
Yeah. I know. And I appreciate your pumpkin carving. You did a very good job. You and Sally killed it on the pumpkin side. Like, I appreciate pumpkins. For me as a homeowner, there was that moment, I think Matt might agree with me, where I had to do I do Halloween well. I do Halloween big. I put up lights. I do stuff. It's nice. Not crazy, but I do Halloween. And this year I had to think to myself, do I want kids coming up to me? Do I want to hand out candy? Do I want to deal with kids coming? Because that is, for me, the biggest part of the experience. It's watching my kid go trick-or-treating. It's watching other kids go trick-or-treating and giving out candy and just enjoying the day. And I had to, a month ago, sit down and go, I'm not going to put up Halloween this year. I'm not going to do it. I can't dress up in my house if I don't feel comfortable handing out the candy. And I don't know, Matt, did you do the same thing?
I did exactly the same thing, because I even wondered, I mean, will parents let their kids go out door to door this year? I think you almost have to be kind of and take candy from strangers. I mean, that is a risk within itself.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I take the razor blade over the COVID, you know?
Oh, ham bone.
What?
Oh, buddy, that was deep. Cut so deep right there.
What? That was a little nod back to the Satanic Panic when they thought people were putting like candy apples and razor blades. They were. Look at student graves.
They were.
So I remember Halloween.
So that was a big deal for me. I didn't do my house up this year. This is the first time since I've owned my house, 10 years of home ownership, that I've not done my house up at least a little bit. And it is what it is. I just don't want to encourage people to come where I might not feel. I didn't want to do the bucket out. So I was like, well, let's put the bucket in front. I'm like, we know what happens with the bucket. The first kid that comes gets the bucket. I mean, that's how it works, even with the cameras all over my front door. So we didn't decorate. We're not going to do candy. I do give props to the people who are like jerry rigging like candy shoots for their house. Like they're
that's
like,
fun.
Our friend Dave is doing that. He's got some sort of contraption where he's gonna be able to fly down. We have a very short patio. Like there's like one step to get to my door. There's no way to pull it off, and I'm not gonna be able to figure it out in time. So be it what it be, that's gonna hurt my feeling of Halloween a little bit. We are going to try to go visit our friends' houses who we know are safe. And do something. Our close neighbors that we know have kids, we might drop off a goodie bag. We're going to try to do something. But look, when you can't do haunted hayrides, when you can't go pumpkin picking, you can't do a lot of stuff that makes what Halloween is, haunted houses at all, it does hurt a little bit. Sitting home for me and just watching horror movies, that's my year. That's called, it's like record store day. Fuck record store day. Every day is record store day for me. Every day is Halloween for me if we're just talking horror movies, and that's why I'm a little bummed out, Hambone.
You know what, George? I can completely understand where you're coming from. And with that, I'm going to tell you what actually bummed me a little bit out about Halloween this year. Antonio Rodriguez of Hawthorne, New Jersey, man, every year puts out a killer display full of zombies, and it brings joy to the people of Hawthorne, and it brings joy to the people who drive by every year, and it does attract a lot of people, but people go, they peek in, they look, take a photo, and they leave. It's something you can completely do safely from your car or from a distance in a year when we need to be socially distanced and away from each other. Well, lo and behold, because why not, it's 2020, someone fucking narked to the Hawthorne police and was complaining about his display after everyone knows he's been putting up this display for years. And so he quietly took his Halloween display down.
Fuckers. I mean, look, be it what it be. I mean,
this was the 15th straight season that he has put zombies up on his lawn. Like, what don't you like about it? What can't you get? What joy do you feel like you need to deprive your local neighbors and the people around you of? We have nothing. Right? Give us something this year. This man takes his time on his weekends and he builds out this massive like zombie display. I've seen it over the last like decade. It gets bigger and bigger every year. So shout out to you, Mr. Rodriguez. Thank you for putting forth such great Halloween excellence and energy. And I am truly sorry that one of your neighbors is a fucking narc.
That sucks. Because it's private property. At the end of the day, even if they narc, what is, first of all, I don't like your term narc, because it's not illegal to put up the shit on your front lawn.
They snitched, they called the cops, call it whatever you want to call it. They made a complaint because they hate fucking fun.
Yeah, but I still don't see what's illegal about it. Last time I checked, it is legal to put up Halloween decorations. It might be illegal if it's drawing mass crowds, but that's on the people in the crowd, not on that guy. It's his private property. I'm
Either
very
way.
Curious. Dig into that a little bit. I kind of want to find
someone
out
someone was
about
a bitch.
It.
I don't want to know about it anymore because I'm very sad, and I hope that whoever did call the cops feels really bad because you're dicks.
Well, he's angry now. Now I've ruined Hambone. Matt.
No, it's fine. Let's talk about horror movies.
Matt, what is your favorite Halloween candy?
My favorite Halloween candy is Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Very good choice. Very good choice. As long as you don't have a peanut allergy. I think I agree with you. Anything of the Reese's variety, peanut butter and chocolate, as many know, Hambone definitely knows, is my favorite combination. Slight sidebar for a second. Ben and Jerry's now has a half-baked peanut butter. So it's chocolate ice cream, peanut butter cookie. Yeah. So go check that out. It might be right up there with my Glampfire trail mix. Ben and Jerry's is my second favorite. But I always was a fan of Reese's Pieces. I was always a big fan of Almond Joys as well. Again, no peanut allergy. Hambone, what about you?
So I'm going to tell you right over the plate, it's the peanut butter cup is my current favorite. But do you want to know what my favorite Halloween candy was before I turned 40?
Sure.
The Charleston Chew. I fucking love the Charleston Chew. The Charleston Chew is, to me, the perfect candy because it's kind of marshmallow in the middle. It's kind of not. It's like a marshmallow nougat. And they had different flavors. They had the chocolate one, the strawberry one. But the Strictly Missionary right over the plate prom night Charleston Chew original was my all-time fucking favorite. However, if you don't get it at the right perfect temperature, you are going to rip out a fucking filling.
That's
just
what
by
I was going to say. Do you have crowns?
I wouldn't mess with it. The minute I turned 40, the Charleston Chew became dead to me because I felt like I was living dangerous with a high deductible. So, yeah, RIP Charleston Chew, always in my heart, is my favorite Halloween candy, but peanut butter cups, the safe bet for me.
For me, nougat's always out. I'm not a nougat fan. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Nougat. Matt, thoughts on nougat?
I haven't thought about a Charleston Chew in decades. So.
I don't think a Charleston Chew is actually nougat. I think he made that up. I think it's some other weird, like nougat, I think of Snickers or even the worst, the Three Musketeers. It's like all nougat.
Have you ever heard of nougat before a candy bar?
No, but I don't know where else I would have heard about it. I'm just saying it's kind of like nugget, but not nugget because there's no meat to it. Even with my ice cream, I need to have like chunks in my ice cream. I don't like plain ice cream. Allison knows this, drives her nuts. I like to have some like, I need stuff in my ice cream. And that's why I like Ben & Jerry's, because it's got tons of stuff. I kind of feel like I need a nut sometimes too. Peanut butter works for me as well, even though I prefer crunchy peanut butter. Guys, let's bring on the movies. I'm going to need a bunch of Halloween sidebars to fill this episode, but let's talk movies. It's been a wacky, wacky year for horror, and a lot of the major tentpole horror movies, like the Halloween sequel, and I believe the Saw sequel, and I'm sure I'm missing some more, Matt, that you could probably bring up. They've all been moved to whenever, next Halloween? I don't know. They've really haven't said anything. How have you seen Halloween shift due to the pandemic, Matt?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, there were several films I was really looking forward to this year. Don't forget about A Quiet Place 2.
Forgot about that.
There was also a very small movie called Antlers that looks very, very intriguing. I really like the look of the trailers. And like you said, it's all been shifted to this. I mean, who knows when movies are going to go? I mean, if movie theaters even survive.
Yeah.
It's just a very, very strange time filled with uncertainty. No one knows where they're going. No one knows what's going to happen.
Do you think it affected Halloween more than other genres? Do you think it's par for course? I feel like VOD is where a lot of movies have ended up recently, but I don't know if maybe that was where they were heading anyway. Do you see a shift more towards VOD for horror more than other genres because it's such a niche type of film?
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with it for a different reason, predominantly because horror movies don't tend to cost as much, nowhere near, you know, an Avengers movie. So it's less of a risk for a studio to dump a horror movie on VOD. I would also add, you know, movies that were shot, you know, last year or 2 years ago, movies like The Beach House, Blood Quantum, Sea Fever, that now take on new meaning in the age of COVID. There's new, you know, symbolism. There's new added tension. I mean, I watch a movie now and I see somebody go outside and they don't have a mask. I have this subconscious reaction like something's different. So it, there's definitely been a huge influence on all aspects of horror movie.
Hey, Hambone, how about something like a Shudder? Do you think Shudder has had a renaissance in this day and age?
I think Shudder probably did great with COVID. And I hate to say that, but, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. And I think that this is arguably, maybe not arguably, maybe it just is, you know, the worst year we've ever seen in most of our generations. There's got to be some silver linings. There's got to be some good things that come from such an abhorrent shit show. And I think something like a channel like Shudder, where in a lot of streaming services, unless you're Quibi, you know, this is your time to shine, because this is like people need to be able to stay home and watch movies. And for horror fans who are missing out on wonderful things like haunted hayrides and haunted houses and like, you know, going places and Halloween parties and everything and going to like midnight movies and chiller theater and New York Comic Con, like to be able to get a lot of great new releases while you're sitting at home is a really clutch thing. So I think that something like Shudder is probably doing great for horror fans because it's doing them a service where it is curating every month classic horror movies, fresh and on the cusp horror movies, new things that maybe we're going to hit theaters that now they're just like, well, we're going to put it on Shudder because we know that an audience is going to watch this. So I think that, you know, one of my silver linings this year is that I definitely, you know, when I had lost my job last year, I was like cutting down like a bunch of different stuff while I was trying to figure my stuff out. And I was like, well, I'm not going to get rid of Shudder. And I think, you know, if anything, I'm going to want to watch more horror movies. And man, was I right. So I think, you know, Shudder is a silver lining for 2020.
I think we should start with the beginning of the year. Now, before, and I could be missing something beforehand, but it looks like the big horror release, and it's probably going to be the one that made the most money for the year, prior to COVID happening, or during, because it happened right as the movie was launching, was Invisible Man. Was that the first big horror movie of the year, Matt? Am I missing anything?
No, I agree with you. You know, because you have to figure when Invisible Man came out, that was just post Oscars, you know, so there wasn't really much going on. And yeah, I mean, they were smart because the movie was out for about 3 weeks. And then once it became clear that theaters and society was going on lockdown, they dumped it back out on VOD. So, I mean, it was financially a very, very smart move. It did make a lot of money. And I know some people didn't care for it. I love the film. I thought it was fantastic.
I thought Invisible Man was great. I don't think it was the best. It wasn't the best movie of the year for me. It's landing at number one on most lists. For me, I felt like it dragged a little bit, but it definitely was the best version of what you could do with an Invisible Man, bar none. Like, I find that the concept of that power slash horror power, I don't know what you would call it. Like, invisibility is a tough thing, even though I think, Hambone, you said that was the one you would prefer to have, right? Was that the one you went for?
Well, invulnerability is what I said.
Invisibility and vulnerability, same thing. Anyway, the correct answer
Very
is flight.
Very kind
of party. Elizabeth Moss, later on in the year, did a movie called Shirley, which was definitely a stranger psychological thriller. I think she did a much better job in Invisible Man, and you know, I enjoyed it. I really did enjoy it. It just wasn't as terrifying as I thought it could be, but definitely more terrifying than The Invisible Man should be. Does that make sense, Hambone, or am I lost my mind?
No, it does make sense. It does make sense because I think it really does tie into like themes that were very prevalent happening last year when it was getting made, especially a lot of the stuff that was happening with the Me Too movement, and where you have a person who is consistently getting gaslit, who's getting abused, who is having all of the power taken away from them, and then, you know, what happens in the end, which is, I think, very powerful.
Yeah, no, great movie. I think that was basically like, that was our Halloween movie for the year. That was like the blockbuster Halloween movie of the year. But there was definitely a ton of weird, weird little indie hits too. We talked about Shudder before. The first big post, it's not post-COVID because we're still in COVID, but the first in COVID moment, The Host, right? Am I completely off the ball there? That was like the one everybody's talking about.
Yeah, that was one where this is shocking how quickly they got this done and turned this around, because that's like almost in real time to what's happening in the world. And, in the end of this segment, I'm going to give you like my top five, what I've seen so far this year for my Halloween movies. But that's definitely like number one for me, for Halloween movies this year, for horror movies this year. Host, it's wearing the crown, because holy shit, they did such a good job in real time.
Yeah. Matt, we didn't talk to you about Host when we reviewed it earlier in the year. What were your thoughts on it? I just want to put in really quickly that I loved it better on second viewing, when I really got to absorb some of the little things in there I missed the first time around.
I would say, Hambo was talking about Shudder, and it was a brilliant move by Shudder. I mean, the filmmakers had made this short very early on in the lockdown, and everybody was first getting introduced to Zoom, and Shudder stepped right up, threw these kids a decent budget, and they wrote, filmed, shot this all in the lockdown. I mean, it's only about an hour long, but what an incredible piece of work. Some very creative, ingenious, just to finish a film. And, Shudder did it right. They paid for it, got it out there, and they gave these kids a deal to make a real full-length horror film, outside of lockdown.
I completely agree. I think my favorite scene in that movie, and it still sticks to me this day, was when the girl was... And I didn't know this at the time because I wasn't really using Zoom, but the backdrop replacement, I'm sure everyone knows it now, but being able to swap out your background on Zoom, or we've got Blue Jeans at Verizon, and put it anything you want. You can put a photo of yours, you can put a looped video, you can put, like, I do tiki backgrounds of some sort, like some sort of tiki bar. But she put a loop of herself walking into her room back and forth, and it comes on as she's being murdered. So she's killed, she's on the ground, she's out of shot, dead, but she's still looping, walking back and forth in and out of their room. That was brilliant and something I really had never seen before.
Yeah, and also, especially coming out like so, when people are getting used to the idea of the pandemic and like what's going on, to be like, well, everything kind of sucks, but at least we have Zoom. And you're like, oh, fuck, Zoom's haunted. Now we have nothing.
Poor
that
Zoom.
That's horrifying.
Poor Zoom. Look, the only thing about that movie that bothered me a little bit was I was a tiny bit bothered by the fact that like they had, it's a seance, and all it took was some idiot on the call to be like, let's make fun of seances, and I don't believe it. I'm just going to make fun of the seance process to like cause pure evil to come into the world. I thought was a little bit of an over-the-top gesture. I think the person who was holding the seance maybe should have given that warning before she allowed them to go ahead and do it, especially since these were like college kids, right?
She did give them the warning and tell them to not make fun of stuff and to like take it very seriously. She like laid it right out there for them, like, even though this is over the thing, be respectful.
Yeah,
and they didn't.
Be respectful and like, you will die if you fuck around is a little bit of a different like flex,
Well, I don't think she was planning on dying, and I don't think she was really planning on them fucking around either. And it was funny because I've been rewatching Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which is nearly unwatchable on a high definition television, by the way. The first couple seasons, it's like fucking watching Dark Shadows. It's so grainy and dark. Sarah Michelle Gellar, if she goes walking into a scene, she's like an amorphous blob until the light hits her blonde hair. Then you're like, oh, there she is. I see her now. This is happening. But it's funny because initially I was like, I don't know about like a haunted Zoom call. But then I remember back in 1997, I, Robot, You, Jane, the episode where Moloch gets scanned into a computer and terrorizes everybody. So, I mean, there's been precedent for this in horror for like over 20 years now at this point.
I get all of this. I love people taking a risk with horror movies. And I feel like sometimes it doesn't happen as often as you like it. People, look, there's a way to settle into an archetype, the Freddy / Michael Myers / who's the other one, Jason thing, or this or that. And I feel like this is a great year for trying out new things. The one movie that we all watched this week was Spontaneous, and I love the fact that they took the whole Heather's type of movie and made it like the most fucked up teen horror flick I've seen since maybe Scream.
I'm going to say this is also on my top five list for the year, and it's come so late in the year. And it's one of the best done movies in this genre, I think, ever put to film. Brian Duffield, who is also responsible for The Babysitter, also responsible for The Babysitter, Killer Queens, also responsible for Love and Monsters, having a fucking banner year, this guy puts together this amazing, and I'm going to read you the description. Get ready for the outrageous coming-of-age love story about growing up and blowing up. When students in their school begin exploding, literally, seniors Mara and Dylan struggle to survive in a world where each moment may be their last. And, you know, I read the description, and I love Catherine Langford, who's the main actress in this movie. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to watch this movie. I don't know. But then you and Matt were like saying it was great. And then I put it on last night and I put my phone down. And it takes a lot for me to put my phone down these days when I'm watching a movie or a TV show for me to really be completely enveloped in a story. And this is it. I highly, 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 highly recommend Spontaneous. It's brand spanky new. It's a very good and oddly like challenging movie about life and grief and kind of where you fall in between.
This is an hour and 40-minute version of the courtroom scene in Boys Season 2. Let me be very clear. There actually is a scene in this movie that really is the season from the scene from Boys. Am I wrong? I mean, it's literally like you don't know who's going to explode next from where, right?
Yeah, and it's not a spoiler. The whole thing is about teenagers whose heads explode. I mean, it's like Heathers meets Scanners. But
I've never seen Scanners, and it's not just their heads that explode. Their whole bodies explode. They literally just explode. They pop. They pop like a balloon. They say it very quickly. It's in the first 10 minutes someone pops. It is so crazy. Matt, what were your thoughts on this movie?
I agree. I absolutely love this movie. Just to warn our listeners, it's less about horror and more of an allegory of what kids or what anybody deals with, like Hambo just said, grief. It's not like scary, like who's going to blow up, but you know what kids today face in terms of COVID, in terms of school shootings. It's an interesting and really smart, sophisticated, hell of a wit and great pacing film. Just absolute wonderful performances. I just love this film.
Yeah, I might actually have to watch this again with Allison. It was a movie. Well, if I ever can watch anything again with Allison. I have not, just spoiler alert, I have yet to finish Bly Mansion. Do you know what's going on in my home right now, Hambone?
Oh, I know. And we've talked about this on several episodes. Well, you are in a war with your toddler.
It's continuing. It's continuing. It's just going and going. It literally, so I have now bought the $600 twin mattress for his race car bed so nice. I can sleep in. Allison goes to bed at like 8:30. I then sit, and now I watch horror movies now. So that's how I get like this is what I do now. So I can watch my horror movies, but it is like, I can't watch that last episode of The Vow because I'm trapped being like, well, this is a George Allison show. And now I can't watch it. This is my horror. This is my true horror. That wasn't a spoiler alert. I know I've said it before, but I like to rant about these things and people want to hear about our lives. Anyway, I thought Spontaneous was phenomenal. I thought, again, a movie that does not follow the same pattern you expect from a teenage horror movie, a high school teenage horror movie. Usually I expect to be, like, have to dumb it down a lot, and nothing is dumbed down here. And I love it. I absolutely loved it. Highly recommend it. Possibly one of my favorite movies of the year.
Me too. And they do something really unique that I'm not going to say because I don't want to spoil it, but it's something that they never really do in horror movies. And Matt, I think you back me up on this without spoiling it. You know, what they did, they don't do, you know?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it's something that, like, the whole time I was waiting for it to happen and it didn't. And when it didn't happen by the end of the movie, I was so okay with it. It made me love the movie even more.
Yeah. You're not going to tell us what that is, though, right?
No, you know, I'll tell you offline, but I don't want to ruin it for people because I think they need to kind of see the movie and experience it for themselves.
That's weird that you'd bring it up if you're not going to tell people. I will tell you what I loved about it. I love the fact that they did not show a popping, a spontaneous combustion until like far into the movie. I believe the first few were literally, you would either see like the reaction shots or you would see like the blood splurt around, you know, onto the sides or onto people, but you wouldn't really see a pop until well into the movie. I felt a little bit like Jaws there. Wouldn't you agree, Matt?
Well, yeah, because, and that's, if you look closely, that's what would happen to the characters. They would turn their head for a brief second and the person they were talking to would have exploded.
I love the sound effect. Love the sound effect there.
So they don't even get to see it themselves. So we're experiencing this world as they are experiencing it. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't, you know, we don't know where they're going to go or what the twists are turned. And they don't know either. Like Hambo just said, it, you know, a full on visual of the experience doesn't happen until later on. But that doesn't mean it's not bloody. This is Evil Dead 2, gallons and gallons of blood.
Yeah,
buckets
of blood, but not gore. That's the way I saw it. It really wasn't. No. It's not gore. So don't be afraid of that. And again, it reminded me a lot of the movie. I think it was Mom and Dad, from last year or the year before, which was a Nick Cage movie where the parents turn evil and want to kill their children, and it was still kind of tongue in cheek, and it felt a little bit like that. It does err a little more towards the comedy horror, but again, more of a thriller than a horror. I'll not explain it. I love it. Go watch Spontaneous. Matt, what's your favorite horror movie of the year?
Well, I mean, it's really, really tough. I mean, there were a bunch of films. I just remember before Invisible Man, don't forget Underwater with Kirsten Stewart came out.
Loved
another
Underwater.
Brian Duffield film.
Yeah. I mean, that movie gets a lot of credit. I think it was mismanaged in the promo material. They tried to make it look more like an Aliens type of movie. But if someone had just flat out said, hey, look, there's a Cthulhu Underwater movie, bang, I'm there. I didn't realize that until I was halfway through the film. But like I said before, the current circumstances or environment definitely added some serious tension to movies like The Beach House and Sea Fever, both two excellent, excellent independent films. I have to give a ton of credit to In the Vast of Night, which was kind of like a 50s radio version of an alien invasion, but really creatively film directed. I mean, just absolutely wonderful. Gosh, I mean, my top one, I mean, Color of Out of Space is up there. I really loved After Midnight.
I loved After Midnight.
Yeah, it was by the same guys who did The Battery. Just absolutely a lot of fun. I would say the biggest surprise of the year for me was a movie that was released last October and got pretty much dumped on, was The Hunt. Like Spontaneous, that was just such a wonderful, violent, gory surprise that it was very, very funny, very pretty short, great pace. I walked into that movie not expecting anything and was just absolutely blown away.
We reviewed The Hunt on here. I thought it was okay. It was a little bit on the cheese side, and it was did follow all the formulas. The formulaic, what's the word for it? The battle royale style movie, but it wasn't as smart or sophisticated.
It was just a fun movie. A really fun movie.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
I don't consider that a horror movie. I feel like that kind of falls into the weird, maybe action thriller. But the gore is what leads things to be a little more on the horror side. You mentioned Underwater. Let's not forget my favorite water movie of the year, and there was a lot of them, Sea Fever, which I think you recommended to me and I loved.
Yes, that was this is the perfect example of a movie that was shot well before COVID, but just takes on a whole new meaning as a group of people stuck on a boat encounter something infectious. That's all I will say. Just a wonderful, isolated, very paranoia film. Definitely worth
that is the one movie where if you were to say, George, if there's one movie you could tell Hambone he should watch at some point in his life, Sea Fever is it. I feel it was like the happy, version, happier version of Alien. Like, I just like love that movie in so many ways. I love the main character. I like that it was a girl that was just coming on board to be a marine biologist, but she's trapped with like very seafarer like pirate types. And then, like, you know, the monster type movie happens. Love that movie so much. I think I liked it more than Underwater.
I would definitely, along that same line, recommend The Beach House. Again, oddly prescient, infectious. I don't, you know, I want to keep it as ambiguous as possible. But yeah, I mean, Sea Fever was just absolutely exciting. Wonderful to watch.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, it was like PG-13. It wasn't a horror movie in that it was a gore fest. It was more just a very smart monster movie, and it really impressed me. I really was surprised watching it. And that was the one where I'm like, oh my God, Hambone's got to watch this. He's going to love this movie.
Yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
As long as you like water movies. I don't know. Maybe some people just don't like water movies.
No, I'm into it.
You know, it's not like, it's definitely not like that Crocodile movie from last year that was just a weird water movie. Hambone, what have you loved this year? What have been some of your favorite movies?
So it's very difficult because of the way that things land on Shudder and on Amazon, where it'll say 2020, but it actually came out in 2019.
To be fair, we do Halloween to Halloween.
And you know what? Then that's fair. So my top five this year has been Host. There's another movie on Shudder called Spiral, which is actually a pretty, like, it's one of those movies where, you know, a couple and their kid moves to a small town, don't find out the secret until it's too late kind of movies. Very, very subtle, very low-key movie, but very good. Vampire vs. the Bronx on Netflix, which just dropped recently, which I thought was fantastic. Happy Halloween, Scooby-Doo. I actually just watched this weekend. This was the 2020 Scooby-Doo cartoon movie with Elvira and Bill Nye the Science Guy. It goes in directions that you don't think it's going to go. And it gets really fucking weird. And by the time they go home with it, you're just like, holy shit, didn't see that coming. This is awesome. So that made it for this year as well. But I'm going to say, man, number one, holding the title right now is Spontaneous.
Yeah, Spontaneous was great. Again, I feel that your direction of horror is definitely moving further away from the Hereditary type movies, Ambone.
It's just what, I mean, well, that's the thing. I saw a lot of different movies this year. And some stuff like, you know, The Shed was 2019, which I really did love as well. I really enjoyed Alive, hashtag Alive. I saw like a bunch of other stuff that was popping up on Shudder too that didn't really, I didn't feel like it was even considerably a horror movie, but, you know, they found a way to kind of sandwich that in there as well. I don't know, man. My idea of horror, I think, has expanded from when I first got into horror when I was younger until now. Like, I can see that there's kind of like a different layer of horror in different kinds of movies. But, you know, I tended to try to keep my list this year spooky, you know, running the gamut from spooky fun to like flat out horror.
Yeah, I've been obviously been mulling around a little bit in the new, I think it's the A24 genre. And I know
they make
like
great
movies. Don't like be called genres, but I feel it's more realistic and more like depression being the monster and the evil in the world than it is necessarily a true evil. I just saw Relic, which is about, you know, people call it the evil grandma movie, but it's really about, you know, it's really about dementia and Alzheimer's and personifying that. Do you watch Relic yet, Matt? I feel like that movie would be up your alley.
Yeah, I did see it. And, you know, yes, I agree with you. I understand what you're saying. And it's the same thing with Spontaneous. Horror elements. I mean, Relic is definitely, if you have a grandmother or your own parents on the tip of dementia or Alzheimer's, it's a rough watch. It will tug at you. You will relate to it. And that's another movie, like Hambone was saying about Spontaneous, where they don't reveal certain things. And it's left up to your interpretation. And that depends upon how you're related to the movie. So it was fascinating for me to watch.
Then I also saw and I enjoyed two Evil Kid movies this year, both The Lodge and Z. Z being about the one kid that's just kind of off and something's definitely wrong. He's the one with that horrible scene that I told you about, Hambone, where like he's upstairs playing with the other kid and they're like messing around and he just like one of the kids just falls down the staircase. Like,
yeah,
like that was just a fucked up kid. But the lodge is the two kids who may or may not be trying to murder the person who's watching them. I think it's a stepmother that I saw earlier in the year. Both of them, very, very dark levels of horror. I think we might have reviewed it recently, but I also saw Swallow, which is body horror. I didn't know that was a genre, but I guess there is a genre called body horror. Matt, can you tell me more about that? I did not know what body horror was until I saw this.
Well, sure. I mean, body horror, you know, don't say that in front of Cronenberg, because that's pretty much what he built his career on. I mean,
bread and butter.
It's a terrifying thought to imagine your own body revolting against you. The king of the king of body horror is obviously the late 80s Brian Yunzab film Society. So if you don't know what body horror is and you want to see something that you have never, ever seen before, try to dig that one up. But you have my warnings. That is brutal, that movie. In fact, something I could recommend to horror film fanatics, AMC, I'm not a big fan of Eli Roth's films, but he does have a series on AMC called The History of Horror. They're just entered in season two, and last week's episode was about body horror. So if you want a really good definition and a bunch of examples, check out that episode.
I feel, and I'm going to get back to you later. I want to know more about that movie that you mentioned, Society, I believe. I will definitely check that out.
Don't eat first.
The movie that stuck with me throughout the year was The Platform. I don't know if either of you have seen that. I know Hambone, you have not. The Platform is the movie where basically you are stuck on a platform that you are stuck in a prison, and it's a prison with the middle has an elevator that goes up and down. It's a platform that has food on it. People at the top of the platform get all the food. People at the bottom get whatever's left at the bottom. It is such a fucked up movie because you will still see people like murder each other for like a chicken bone by the time you get towards the bottom. It's just so incredibly haunting. I don't want to say it's like Martyrs because there isn't much gore, or there is some, but it's not. It's just like I could see what would happen to me. I could imagine what would happen to me if like me and Hambone were stuck in a prison cell and we did not get enough food. I just could visualize, would I eat Hambone at some point? I don't know. Like,
that'd be delicious.
It would be very interesting. Did you see The Platform, Matt?
Yes, I did. And yeah, you're right. It is a brutal ride. Very obviously a metaphor for class levels and how the people on the bottom, trickle down economics and all that bullshit, really tend to get screwed. It's a ride. It's on Netflix, I believe. I can't remember. It's foreign.
Yes, yes it is.
Spanish, Portugal. I don't remember.
Something
but,
like that.
Yeah, that's worth it.
But there's not a ton of dialogue in it, so I don't remember being bothered by it. I don't even remember it having closed captions. But it is a great movie, and that is probably the one that really stuck in me. Biggest letdown of the year, I felt, was VFW. I thought that could have been Green Room, but better, and it was just... I the more I think about the movie, the more I hate that movie.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I think that it gets a lot of hate, and it's not really warranted. It's a movie where it is what it is. Like, it's exactly what you expect it to be. I mean, Green Room is a different kind of animal, though, because Green Room is a very, like, it has weird turns in it. And it is, like, survival horror, but at the same time, it's also very, like, this is a story about kind of, like, a class warfare kind of thing. VFW was like, yeah, these are, like, crazy meth heads who are trying to get their drugs back. Wackiness ensues. Old guys.
Well, yeah, the movie is essentially a throwback to late 70s, 80s, think Carpenter and Assault on Precinct 13. If you go in expecting nothing, I thought the cast was fun. A lot of recognizable faces.
Yeah, definitely.
I was looking more at like Expendables versus Green Room. Okay, meets Green Room. I don't know what I was thinking. That was the one movie I was just a little bit bummed out about. I don't know what else to go with that. I think Color of Space is the last movie we really should focus on, because that might be my favorite horror movie of the year. And I feel like it kind of got lost in that beginning of the pandemic. And I feel like it should be brought back up again post Lovecraft Country. What do you think, Matt?
I absolutely agree. I'm looking right now at the title of my list of best of, and Color of Out of Space is right there. For those who don't know, Richard Stanley came out of hiding a long time ago. He did a movie called Hardware. That was a pretty good horror science fiction film. Most notably, he's known for starting the remake of Island Dr. Moreau, got fired from that movie, dressed up as one of the extras, and snuck back on set. But Color Out of Space, I mean, beautiful cinematography, excellent palette, Nick Cage being Nick Cage, but it totally fits in this story. And that the end of that movie goes to some pretty dark places. Speaking of body horror.
Yeah, I loved it. I think that's probably it. It's probably my number one. I think it's Color of Space, and it's spontaneous. It's the platform, and everything else kind of just feels it. I've seen a lot of bad horror movies this year too, though, that I don't know why I was even watching. It's just I will start getting on the I need to watch all the horror movies of the year, and then start going down the path of watching weird cult movies. I'm like, why am I wasting my time with this? But I felt like for the most part, because of the pandemic, what we got was definitely on the better side, because there was so few that, you know, there's so much few to pick at. I think if you feel passionately about your movie, you're going to trust it'll do better on VOD or in some sort of on-demand distribution. I feel like if you're kind of iffy, you might hold out, because I feel people will go to movies to see anything. It's just my thoughts. Hambone.
No, I agree. I think that, you know, people need to kind of get comfortable with the idea of renting their movies on demand. And I think that we are kidding ourselves if we think that there's going to be this grand, we're going to go back to the movies, because it's not fucking going to happen. I don't even know if there's going to be movie theaters left in 2021, or what state it'll be, or what company's going to buy them up, or even if we are going to get mass people in theaters again. I think the halcyon days of like $200 million opening weekends and shit are gone. Mm-hmm. So we need to kind of get right with the, hey, we can still make these great movies, but now you're going to watch them on your really nice 4K television.
Yeah.
And pause when you need to.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, Matt, beginning of the year, you were talking about how there's no way in hell movie theaters are going to die. What are your thoughts now?
It's depressing. I mean, people don't really want to talk about it, but look, I mean, there's not going to be, like Hambone said, not before I feel 2022 in terms of multiplex being open, it being okay. AMC is dying. I think you could rent out a theater for $99. And it's such a shame, because the collective feeling of watching a movie, even with a room full of strangers, especially a horror movie, it feeds into the atmosphere. It creeps up on you. You experience, you know, similar feelings with the person four rows in front of you. And it just it makes the whole movie better. Whereas if you're home, you probably pick up your phone every once in a while. Maybe you pause, go to the bathroom, have a cigarette, whatever. It's certainly never, not even close to the same experience. And that's pretty sad. You know, we will have a generation of kids who just don't know what that means anymore.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I was thinking about it this week, and Hambone alluded to it before. My biggest problem with watching movies at home is you have to turn off the phone and move it to another room. Like, if you keep it with you, you will touch it. And that is something the movie theaters, you're just not allowed to do. And I feel like I absorb a lot more when I'm in the movie is when I'm 100% engrossed in the movie. And I think we need to all make that a point to ourselves. Like, if you're going to watch and love movies, put the phone down. Turn off the smartwatch. Do you all agree with that?
I 100% agree with that. And I also think that there is the inflexibility that we're seeing right now from a lot of major studios is that a lot of movies were made with budgets that are conducive to making the kind of money that they're used to making. I think that as this year finishes and as we are looking to 2021 and 2022 and beyond to make movies, we are going to see studios become a lot more friendly with the idea of dropping the budgets reasonably in order to make stuff to put it out there on streaming. Because, like, the inflexibility comes from, well, James Bond needs to make, like, they were talking like $600 million they were going to let it go for to go to streaming. And that's crazy.
Yeah, it's and that I loved seeing that. I know we all shared it around. We're like, look, they did actually look to see what the feasibility would be of moving 007 to a service. Look, it really could have only been Amazon or Netflix, right? I mean, I don't know anybody else who would pay that kind of money or who could even feasibly afford it. And the fact is, they're never going to make that back in subscriptions. They just won't make $600 million. I don't know if 007 would make that type of money post-COVID either. So I think it's really going to be, you know, it's good. We're going to have to see whether the gamble pays off. I'm curious.
But yeah, George, you just bring up an excellent point that hasn't been mentioned in the general consciousness. I mean, regardless of whether your state or your city is on lockdown, a studio isn't going to drop $200 million onto a movie anytime soon. There's not going to be anything that big filming anytime soon because they just don't know when studios can make their money back.
I completely agree. So anyway, we always joke around about the movie thing. It's getting kind of scary now. I don't want to see a world without movie theaters. My whole thing is I don't know if we're going to see a world with AMC, though. It'll be very curious to see what happens there going forward. Well, that's a story for another day, guys. Quick thing that just happened. The Coughing Cats just dropped their acoustic Halloween album, Hambone. Remember I told you everybody's going to do acoustic albums?
Very exciting.
They are doing their acoustic album. It is called the Cover the Coffee. It's Victor and Coffin Funkel, Cover the Coffin Cats. I believe it's actually just Vic and Tommy covering the Coffin Cats acoustically. That just dropped. I love doing Halloween season. This is the last of the Mai Tai Horror Hour. Any final thoughts, Hambone?
Have fun this weekend. I know it's not the same as it always should be, and I know it's going to be different this year, but you can still have fun. Halloween is not canceled. Halloween's in your heart. Halloween's what you make of it. Watch a scary movie. Put on your costume and walk around your house anyway, because fuck it, you bought it. Looks cute on you. Have fun with it. Call your friends. Do something that you can't safely at a social distance. You can salvage this. I believe in you.
Oh, I'm glad you believe in us. Like, you are what inspires us to do better in this world. That's why you know that, in case nobody ever told you that.
Thanks, buddy.
Matt, any final thoughts on Halloween?
Yes, absolutely. If you are stuck for horror films, go try yourself a 7-day free trial of Shudder. It is just great movies from all around the world, independent, foreign. They have a movie called Impetigore, which is a fantastic demon movie from Indonesia. There's just a lot. A Butt Boy is a fantastic film that's like a police procedure about a maniac who can suck things up his ass. Excellent film. There's a lot out there. If somebody says to me, I haven't seen a good horror movie in a very long time, I say to them, you haven't been looking.
Hambone's been trying to get Shudder to sponsor us for ages. It hasn't worked at all. Maybe this episode will be the one that finally gets us over the plate. I'm excited to the year coming up. I'm hoping that movies... I'm hoping horror movies spin back up again. I'm hoping that maybe some of those big temples we're waiting for will not wait till next Halloween. If not next Halloween, if there's no, if there's a vaccine, there's going to be a ton of horror happening. So that's going to probably be a double episode. Hambone, how can the kids reach you?
You can find me on the Twitter at Hambreaker. I tweet about board games. I tweet about cute animals. I tweet about Dungeons & Dragons. You can follow my day-to-day adventures on podcasting and in life over on my Instagram. I posted like a few pictures this weekend, so stuff's happening. George, where can the people find you?
I want to know how the kids can find Matt. Let's do Matt first.
I am Matt Giaquinto, or Matthew. You can always find me on Facebook. I'm pretty limited in my social activity, but I am always available to answer anyone's questions or anybody looking for a recommendation. You can also look up my friend Mark Miller, M.L. Miller Writes. He is an excellent, excellent resource for all these little, you know, I'm sure we mentioned a title that somebody out there might go, I've never even heard of that. Excellent resource. I talk to him frequently for independent foreign little horror movies that just might sneak past the mainstream public.
Hey, Hambo, do you know what people have not said to me since we stopped making drinks on the air?
You sound drunk?
No, you're not mean to Hambone anymore.
Wow, wouldn't you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's a correlation.
Yeah, I used to get that all the time. You're so mean to Hambone. Why are you so mean to Hambone on the air? I'm like, no, it's a gimmick. It's how we do it. Yeah, that kind of stopped a little bit. So it's good that I'm not mean to you.
I love it.
Anyway, you can reach me at GLK Creative on Instagram. You can reach me on GLK Creative on Twitter. I'm at cultofjord.com. That's my blog with all my rock and roll stuff. You can find us at mytitv.com, our entire 284 episode archive, as well as all the video ones where we used to make actual drinks, you know, back in the day when there was like a Hambone 2. And then there was the time where you regressed into, we were really mean to you in those first few episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They were good, though. They were really, they stand the test
were
of time. They were. Go watch them. I repost them all the time. Anyway, Hambone, I am psyched to do another Halloween episode, and I hope everyone will rate, review, and subscribe. This is I think it's a Mahaloween, Hulaween? How do we do, how should we take it out this time, Hambone?
Everybody remember, be nice, vote next week, wear a mask, socially distance yourself, celebrate Halloween. Aloha.